From Knockadoole to Ardmore, so much to do and see. This week, a little bit of a departure, because we're not going from Knockadoole to Ardmore. In fact, welcome again, Mike, to the programme, our resident, Mike Brooks, our resident historian. Mike, you took a little bit of a trip to the Kathleen and May.
I did.
Tell us all about this.
And I'll tell you, Noel, do you know something? One of the things was starter was yourself.
Yeah.
Because I was listening back to podcasts that are on, you know, CRY do all the podcasts as well.
Yes.
And one of your podcasts came up was the Kathleen and May back
That's
in
right,
2003.
Yeah. We actually done a programme
in the ship's cabin,
actually.
This is the one I heard.
Was it? Yeah.
And it was absolutely brilliant, in fairness to it. And it was just a chance, we'll say, because I was listening to that, and if anybody, again, the podcast is there still, please listen to it, because it's absolutely amazing. I'm after sending this over now to England and everywhere like that, because for these people on the boat, which I'll get into. But I, what it was, guys, was good morning to everybody. I call it an absolute brilliant, for me, it was a privilege to visit the Kathleen and May. If you, and I know people are going to disagree with me, where the boat is at the moment is in Nielsen's Boatyard. It's a dry dock, and it's in Gloucester.
Is it Gloucester?
Yeah. Everybody thinks it's in Liverpool, but
yeah,
it's not.
Yeah, we all thought it was in Liverpool. Yeah.
And if you Google it and ask for today, where is the location of the Kathleen and May, it'll say Liverpool.
Yes.
But I can guarantee you it's absolutely in Gloucester, because I was actually sitting in it, you know, the way it was. It's in a dry dock, so you can go in underneath, which I did. I was delighted to do it.
Yes.
The masts are down now and everything like that at the moment. It's covered. We'll see the whole boat.
Is it?
It's a big kind of like a temporary roof put over it.
Yes.
No, like a canopy type one.
So it's in pristine condition.
Pristine condition. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. I kind of went over with thinking, geez, you know, is it going to fall apart or whatever it is? You could sail this tomorrow. You could drive.
Go away. So,
oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, yeah. The masts, as I said, are down.
Was it 2002, 2003? The memory now escapes
me. Yeah, I think it was 2003 was your podcast.
Yeah, because I remember actually it was some sight to see it rounding Easter Point.
Ah, listen, yeah.
It was absolute. And I think there is, Mikozzi, I think, actually has something up on YouTube.
He does.
About the Kathleen and May. It was some sight there, actually.
And it's well worth going on and seeing Mikozzi's the work there as well.
Yeah.
Because there's a little film about it as well here in Yall. But there's a lot of different films about it, let's be honest about it. It's just an amazing ship. It's a very famous ship, we'll say. I suppose just to give it a little bit of history, Noel, if it's okay, the Kathleen, we all know the Kathleen and May, you know the way the Kathleen and May, we'll say, and the Nellie Fleming, they would have been the two famous ships.
They were two sister ships, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll say, so the actual Kathleen and May itself was, we'll say, built in 1900, so it's actually 122 years old at the moment.
My goodness.
And it was built for Captain John Coppock. And he was named initially after his, so it wasn't the Kathleen and May then when it was built, it was named after his daughters, and they were called the Lizzie and May. So it was the Lizzie May, not the Kathleen and May.
You've evoked a memory with me now, because I can remember the late, I did an interview actually with the late Patrick Ahern.
Yeah.
And Patrick Ahern actually was on, and he actually referred to it, the Lizzie.
The Lizzie.
The Lizzie.
But he was, because was Patrick Ahern during the Fleming time though? He wouldn't have been on the Lizzie.
Oh, no, it was the Fleming.
Yeah.
But even they knew the previous name of it.
Jeez, yeah.
Amazing.
That's a good one, actually.
Yeah.
Because, and as I suppose that was it. I suppose the old crew that were on it just kept calling it the Lizzie, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It would have been, and it was the Lizzie May, named after Captain Coppock's. But as I said, it was built in Coonaghy. Now, everybody thinks Coonaghy is in Ireland and down Rosslea Airway and all that, but it's not. It's actually North Wales.
Yes.
And the easy way to say it is, if you look at Liverpool on the map, Noel, just directly south of it is Coonaghy.
Coonaghy.
But it's in Wales.
It's in Wales, yeah.
It's not in England. Obviously,
yeah.
Liverpool is just kind of on a border town, border city, but it's just south of it, and right dead south of it, in just in Wales. Because I passed through, I'd go up Dunleary or Dublin over to Holyhead, and it's not too far away from Holyhead then either. So, and I think there's a small little museum there called the Kathleen and May.
Oh, is there?
So this is where, yeah. So there's a lot of kind of interest everywhere for the Kathleen and May as well. It's not just us, you know, the way, that's the way I look at it.
Yes.
The ship itself, Noel, it was constructed, and this is kind of just, if anybody's into boats, and this is what I've just written down here as well, kind of a copy and paste bit, but it was constructed of double framed of oak, which was covered in 3 inches by a thick seasoned pitch pine. So the planks were the seasoned pitch pine, both inside and outside. So yes, there was double planks there as well. It was built to carry a cargo of about 226 tons of cargo. So not huge.
Not huge, but
it was a coaster.
Yeah, it was a coaster. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it was we'll say 226 tons, but, you know, from...
It was probably one of many, because you had the D-Wadden here as well.
You
had so many ships, I suppose,
and, you know,
playing their trade up and down the coast.
And a funny one about the D-Wadden, just by the by about the D-Wadden, my own nephew, Eric Brooks there, Eric was telling us about the D-Wadden. He said, it's actually... more or less, it's over in England at the moment, but I think there's a decision going to be made in January whether to scrap it if nobody takes it. So because the D-Wadden is a bit different, because it's, first of all, it's a newer boat. I think it's 19-something, you know, the way 20s or 30s or whatever it was.
Yes.
But it was an iron-hulled boat as well. So it wasn't a wooden boat.
Yeah.
But we know the D-Wadden from here, because the D-Wadden used to go all the way up to Blackwater, up as far as Janeville, you know, the way with the pit
props. That's
right,
yeah.
And generally... that's what it was like. Kind of, we think of it, kind of, there was a lot of different, we think pit props, what they used to say was coal in, pit props out. So
coal, that's right, pit props, of course, so, but for the to prop the...
to prop the pits that the coal came from.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It was a bit of both, like it was, they gave us the coal,
we gave them the pit props
to hold up the pits during the mining and all that kind of good stuff as well. But she was a mighty little ship, in fairness to her, because we'll say she was kind of really a coastal. You know, we call them coasters now as well, even today, smaller ships, metal ships, we call them the coasters. But she would have been a coaster as well. So she, you know, they followed the coast around.
Yes, yes.
And she would have done UK, Ireland, Channel Islands, all this kind of good stuff as well. And the main thing, Noel, I suppose, was they used to carry as small as crew as possible, because this was crucial to, I suppose, the commercial success of the ship.
Mm.
The less people you had to feed, the less people you had to pay.
Of course, yeah.
You know, the more, and because they're not huge tonnage, as they said yourself, you know, the way, as I said, 220 odd tons, 200 tons, whatever. But in the first 8 years, under Captain Coppock's time, we'll say, because he had it for the first eight years, she sailed 40,000 kilometres, or 40,000 nautical miles.
My goodness.
So that would have been about 50,000 land miles.
So she was over and back and up and down the coast. Yeah.
And carrying... because, like, you had to be moving to make money. That's the only way to say it.
Mm.
And she was carrying, like, it wasn't just, as we said, coal out, pit props out, coal in. Carrying cement, coal.
Jack of all trades, basically.
Everything.
Grain, it could be carrying.
They would
everything.
Do everything.
Yeah.
Pitch, clay, bricks, wood, everything. Absolutely everything. Anything that could be, like a truck today would kind of bring anything. But then where the yawl connection, I suppose, comes in. Now, she's only 8 years old, so 1908, she was purchased by MJ Fleming of yawl. The family are still here today, you know, it's great to see it. And then it was the Flemings who named it Kathleen May after his daughters.
Yes.
And it was kind of really at that stage, it was placed in the coal trade between Bristol Channel and Ireland. And it was carrying oats, our pit props, and on the return journeys as well, anyway, you know, the way. So they would say coal in, then
pit
oats,
out,
pit props out, and corn. It could be anything like that as well out. But mainly the kind of the one was the pit props that we remember these guys. You mentioned it was under Captain Joe Hearn of yawl. She imported coal from places like Lindsay and Garston. And then it was modified a couple of times as well. The ship was changed around a bit. And just before World War One, they lengthened the mainsail and a martingale was fitted to the bowsprit. The martingale is the big bit, I think, that fits. I won't even go into it, what it is. But one of the big things on the boat actually was because it was sail. So 1900, and then in 1931, she carried her last cargo under sail. So for 31 years solid,
shit, was sail only.
These guys were brilliant, I have to say. You know the way when they...
And of course, they were master sail.
But like to bring them, like the Kathleen May went up the Bride. You know the way, not only the Blackwater, but she actually went up the Bride up near Janeville near
Janeville,
Tallow.
Yeah.
And she went up as far as there because they were taking the coal, the merchant guy in Tallow. But the Bride View stores, the Bride Valley stores are still there as well. They had it there, did store all there, then bring it down to the harbour, which was Janeville.
There's
two docks, I think, on the Bride near Tallow as well. So you can imagine, like, we look at it as a small river now. You know, when I was underneath the Kathleen May in like October, it's a huge boat. You know, it's just huge. I couldn't get over
how. Yeah,
but she's a very fat-bottomed boat. So in other words, she wouldn't be the draft wouldn't be too much on it.
Yes.
But I'd say if it was full, Noel, this is where, do you know the way, once you start filling it up, she'll go down.
Yeah, she'd take a fair, dip of water,
It was, but still, it went up as far as Jane.
But the amazing thing about it, like I said, you know, she did it all that time, 31 years, we'll say, on sail only.
Yeah.
And how would the sailors able to tack into the wind, use the wind, no matter which way it was going, to their advantage?
But, like, you can do that in the sea. You know, the way out in the open sea, Noel, it's brilliant. But how do you do it in a little river like the Bride?
Exactly.
You know the way it just doesn't make sense.
How do you do it then?
And so even the Blackwater, because you've only a channel in the Blackwater as well, all the way up as far as near, not even up as far as Capoquin, near Capoquin.
You wouldn't have the breadth of the river to manoeuvre back and forth.
There's no tacking at all. This is the whole. Mm. So they had to do a lot with the tide, obviously, enough as well when they were going up. But I think actually, and I suppose there's better, Frank Mills now, I suppose, if we could have him here beside us, probably could tell us a bit better, Mike Hackett. But I think what it was with the Bride, because it was so thin, they actually went up, but they had to back down.
Was it to back down?
I think all the ships had to back. But I think at Janeville, they actually made a kind of a circular, they dug it out a small bit, I think, from memory. But I think most cases, the likes of the Catalina May had to back down.
Well, there's one thing putting, a boat or like that with an engine or something, putting into reverse and backing down. But like,
they must have had horses or something from either side or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I haven't a clue how they did it.
Yeah.
But it was amazing feat how they did it anyway, in fairness. Yeah. Because a lot of these had coasters going up along the Blackwater, the likes of the Blackwater, you know, to Lismore, Capoquin as well. They had smaller, what would they call, the little feeder boats. But it was just a hassle because it was just easier to load your boat, head off to England, not waiting y'all, come down to y'all, waiting y'all and all this and all, you know the way. But they had to do that as well. But in 1931, 31 years afterwards, she carried her last, and it was 202 tons. They have loads of information on this, and it was from Cardiff. It came from Cardiff. In that year, she was purchased by Captain Jewell, who fitted an 80 horsepower auxiliary engine. They say an auxiliary engine, that means the sail.
The sail was still the master.
It was the main power.
The main power,
absolutely. And I think, and then that changed around afterwards in years to come. The sail then became auxiliary, where the engine became the main, we'll say, because, you know, the way it just made more sense to use the engine when you were going up these places that they were going. And it was, if anybody knows anything about diesel engines, it was a Beardmore diesel engine. Never heard of it. And then what they did was they shortened her topsail because they didn't need the topsail anymore to have so much sail, so they could take away some weight probably out of it.
I suppose so,
offset the engine weight, plus obviously the diesel and the oil and whatever had to go into it as well.
It should have been a fairly small engine anyway. It's only a 60 horsepower.
60 horsepower?
Yes, fairly small engine for
80 horsepower, 60 kilowatt, that's what it was. And it was only, as I said, an auxiliary engine. I suppose if you wanted to just move into the docks and all that, you just use the engine then as well at that stage.
Of manoeuvring,
absolutely. We'll say that was kind of just in the 1930s, but in 1936 it was a huge thing that happened for everybody, and you all still remembers it. Thankfully we have the plaque down below as well in the Mall, and it was the sinking of the Nellie Fleming. And this was a huge storm, we'll say, in 1936. I think the wall down below in the Green Park and all that was taken away. There was loads of stuff. The railway station was all damaged, that all seawall into the railway station, everything was damaged. And it was your programme, Noel, that was one of the best things ever. It was one of the guys that you were talking to was telling the story how he reckons he saw the Catalina May.
That was
the late Fleming.
That was the late Patrick Hearn. He made out actually that the Catalina May had an engine. The Nellie Fleming had an engine. And he always maintained that was her downfall.
Yeah.
Because at least with the Catalina and May, they were able to manoeuvre some way against the howling gale.
Absolutely.
The Catalina hadn't a chance.
No, the Nellie Fleming hadn't.
Nellie Fleming hadn't a chance.
Because in fairness, Captain Jewell at the time, he was told not to go out. Apparently, all the other captains told them not to go out.
Yeah.
And this is in the Catalina May.
And he said, we'll make a run for it.
We'll make a run. We'll get it over there quicker, you know, because we have a bit of. And then, as they said, was it the first mate said, turn around, wait, they were out so far, and they bait all night to try and get back in. But Captain Ahern, he wasn't the captain, he was only a young lad at
the
time.
Yeah.
They sent him up the mast, and he could see this boat, and he reckoned to this day it was the Nellie Fleming. And I thought it was a very sad thing, because when they got to Yall finally, because I think they stopped down in Wexford area and all this kind of stuff, but they finally made it into, and it was the two daughters or something like that that were on the quays waiting. And they said, have you seen the Nellie Fleming? And the lad said, isn't she up in Capoquin? and the two started roaring, crying because they knew.
They copped it in.
Yeah.
And I
thought it was so sad.
It was. Yeah.
But like, that was 1936. That was a huge storm as well.
Yes.
And never any trace of the Nellie Fleming was ever found afterwards. All hands were lost. A year later, actually, the Kathleen MA, she had engine trouble. So she was coming in, she was on the auxiliary engine in, we'll say, just under Yaw Lighthouse. But luckily enough, she managed to make it to the port and at that stage into Yaw. But she was in trouble. So she was nearly wrecked a year later, just at Yaw, at the lighthouse. That's what they said at Yaw.
Yeah.
But she did manage, thankfully, to make it. So I reckon this is why, because in 1943 then, she was upgraded, the engine was upgraded then to 125 brake horsepower, and she was a 93 kilowatt.
Yeah.
Deutz diesel engine. Again, I don't know my diesel engines.
German, yeah.
It sounds like a German one. I work for a German company. Captain Jewell himself, he died in 1945, and the Kathleen MA then was left to his son Tommy Jewell. So a lot of the Yaw people today in memory was on the boat. They would have remembered Tommy Jewell.
They'd remember Tommy Jewell, yeah.
And
yeah.
Tommy, and supposed to be a very nice man, really nice man as well. And he continued to operate, we'll say, under the Jewell name as well, up until 1961.
He had a dog. He always kept the dog on
the
board.
Dog.
The dog he had board.
The story was brilliant about the dog.
Yeah,
again,
that's
on the podcast.
Yeah.
Listen to the podcast and listen to about the dog.
Yeah.
I even batting the dog.
That's right. Yeah. Apparently, what he mentioned, the dog was better fed than the crew.
This dog used to get the steak and everything cut up from himself.
Exactly.
And all that.
Yeah.
And the boy's starving. So, brilliant dog.
Yeah.
But we'll say 1961. Because obviously, you know, there was the bigger coasters at that stage. It didn't make sense that, you know, you'd be running this as a commercial boat.
Of course,
anymore.
Yeah.
It was just too much money.
Exactly.
For too little.
Yeah.
You know the way, that was the way it was. So she was, funny enough, she was acquired. This is our Kathleen MA, you know the way. And I read this and I thought, this is brilliant, because we had the Moby Dick film here. But in the early 1960s, she was actually acquired by a film company. So she was in a lot of films as well.
Oh, was she?
Oh, she was. And the Dunedin line and different films around the place and all that. And they'd be backdrops, you know the way they'd have these films?
Yes,
and they'd be backdrops. And even in when I was in Gloucester on the ship, and it was amazing because there was Eileen, who was there? There was Roger, Eileen, and there was, Karen, Eileen, and Roger. And that's who I met. And it was, in fairness, I have to go back to it. Who I kind of sent an email was to Phil Clark, the owner.
Yes.
And he put me in touch with Karen. And then Karen, we'll say, got me on. And you know something, I was embarrassed because I came along on the day and they were waiting for me. There was Karen, Eileen and Roger waiting for me, who were the volunteers, and did all the placards out. You know, they said, we brought out all the information.
Isn't that lovely?
And then they said the actual Nielsen's boatyard, they said, oh, the guys came in this morning, they knew you were coming, and they ran electricity down below so you could see all the decks and they put on lights.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh, do you know something? I was looking behind because I thought the President of Ireland was going to walk in behind me.
Yeah.
And this is who they were waiting
for. And were you
for.
On your own?
Just by myself. Absolutely by myself. And I went, I was
Yaw's ambassador.
Yeah. And I said, you know what? I'm going to soak this in, because it was just brilliant. And they were fantastic people, in fairness to them. And I was telling Noel there a second ago, I was getting just text a minute ago saying happy Christmas to your, you know, the way we're friends now at this stage as well. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant.
And it's great to see, you know, their love for the boat as well, in fairness to it. But as we were just saying, but kind of in the 1960s, she was bought by the film company, and she was laid up then for a while as well. And she was spotted kind of in 1966. There was a guy called Captain W.P. Davis, Paul Davis. And he kind of got the job, but it was a bit too much for him. So he sold it in 1970, and then it was bought by the Maritime Museum. So this is kind of where the Liverpool connection came in for a bit. And they bought it, and they have things, but what they were looking was for funding. So they kind of put it out that they needed funding. They were looking for £2 million off the pounds off the National Lottery, the US National Lottery, to restore, but they couldn't get the grant at the time. So that failed as well. And then kind of today, this is where the bits today, it was Phil Clark that got me gave me the kind of invitation to come across and see the boat. And then it was the businessman, his dad was a guy called Steve Clark, and Steve was from Biddeford, well known for Kathleen MA, and Biddeford,
that's
Yaw,
right,
and
because
Bristol.
He came over with it, actually.
He did, absolutely.
We spoke to him actually on the programme,
and he was things. And as I said, they were all emotional when they came to Yaw, like they were emotional because they could see that, geez, you know, this for
she was coming
people,
home.
Yeah, it wasn't like they go to different ports around England and all that.
Yeah.
It wasn't the same. And they were saying that when the, you know, as I said, when the Kathleen MA came in, everybody was coming kind of on board and they were saying, what can I do for you? What can we do for you? You know, what do you need? And he said, you didn't really get that anywhere else. You know the way he said, so they knew they were really kind of, you know, at a special place, and it was a special boat for everybody here as well. And I know from your programme, there was loads of people came. There was people, I remember some fellow came from Belfast down to see the Kathleen de May sitting in Yall when it was in Yall as well.
Yes.
So it means a lot to a lot of people.
It does.
It's the last wooden three-master schooner still to this day in UK and Ireland waters, I think, at this stage. So it's the very last one original. Because I was telling you that I went to the Dunbrody there, and 2 weeks ago afterwards, just to see that one and compare like for like and all this. Fantastic tour and all that. But still, it's only 20 years old. The Dunbrody, you're down there. It looks ancient as well, but it is 20 years old, but it's just fantastic as well. But
so it is imperative that that link with the past is retained.
Yes.
And what better place to retain it is where she plied her wares.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know something, I tell you now, what it was there was there was a committee then set up afterwards as well, and there's a committee now at the moment, and it's a bit of a kind of a breakaway shoot from the Business Alliance at the moment in Yall here as well. So there's a Kathleen de May kind of committee now set up.
Well, and it was one of the things, actually, it was one of the things that was brought up with the Business Alliance. And I remember, that Ger Flanagan actually...
That's right, yeah, Ger.
You know, they made a presentation
to
Cork County Council. And I have to add here, it didn't exactly go down as we thought it would.
No, I think like you
which
all...
Which is strange.
Yeah, very strange because... And I think a lot of y'all people under this stage kind of are wondering... What's going on? Because Yall is being left behind with everything at the moment. For some reason, we don't know. And you know what? We need something like the Kathleen de May, you know the way. And we're going to plough one anyway. Everybody's going to plough one. There's loads of people, so many people behind us from...
Of course,
much
yeah.
farther mm. places as well, and much mm. higher places yeah. as well, Noel. And you know the way, there's a lot of backing for this now as well from different places. But from Cork County Council, it didn't seem to be...
Well,
you know...
I think there's a late Claude Coburn, actually... in one of his writings, he actually said that Yall stands at a slight angle to the rest of the universe. Right? And I do think at the moment, like looking at the response that Cork County Council gave the Business Alliance, it certainly rings true for
absolutely,
them.
Absolutely, yeah. It's disappointing.
It's very disappointing. Very disappointing.
But you know where you stand with those certain people, you know the way, and this is the only way to say it.
But the good news anyway, the good news is that, you know, all hope is not gone.
Absolutely not.
And I think it would be one of, I think, anybody, I suppose, of my age, a little bit younger, a little bit older, it would be their fervent wish to see something like the Kathleen de May more permanently here and there. But what a tourist attraction it would be.
Do you know something, like, if for me now, and this is only me now, Noel, nobody else around that with the committees and the Business Alliance and all that, for me, I think, you know the way, first of all, you don't want to impede anybody, as little as possible as well on anybody, and especially, I think, like, the best place ever is... Where the tourist office is today, the snooker hall and all that, right behind that. You know the way, there's only a couple of speedboats, there's the lads in the fishing boats and all that are at the opposite end, wouldn't affect them at all. There's a lot of boats in the harbour, you don't want to affect that anybody.
Not at all, no.
There's a couple of speedboats down there, they could just go the opposite side of
them. I think it could fit in there, no problem at all.
But for me even, like I would say it was kind of, because you can't, the buses used to park there, buses can't park there anymore because they can't get around the corner anymore. Mm. So that's the bus part of it is gone. So what about just kind of closing it off there, that section, putting the boat there, but have a little museum, kind of like horse and cart, not horse and cart, but carts, as if you're loading the boat and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of a museum kind of bit as well.
It would be a huge tourist attraction.
I tell you, like, and then we'll say the cross the road is the old courthouse. Put some money into it. Y'all, come on, council, Cork County, put some money into the things. Don't just buy stuff and just leave it sit there. We're talking about the last programme, different houses that should be given to people.
Yes.
Sell the houses and give it to young people around y'all and all that. And then use that money to build infrastructure, you know, to attract people into the town again. We need people in the centre of the town. We need more shops. We need more everything in y'all anyway.
Pardon the pun, but... A rising tide fills all boats.
Everybody's boat.
Yeah, and
stupid.
If you had something like the Kathleen and May there, like that would bring business to the town. It would bring, you know, it would.
What they said was, I think we'll say when I was down below in the Dunbrody, on average now, obviously COVID now, forget about, you know, the COVID numbers.
Before COVID, yeah.
Before COVID, 100,000 every year. Now, I reckon our boat is about half the size. If we got half the amount, 50,000 into y'all. You know, the way we can get the buses back in as well. We could have an area down there. We could have the courthouse as the tourism area. We could have, we talked about Anna Haslam and the soup kitchen as well, which is just around the corner from it,
yeah.
In Barry's Lane as well, from the courthouse. Just open up. Mm. Do you know, just, you need people to be able to see stuff. When they come into a town, you don't want, you know, the way looking at a back wall or whatever. That whole area, the whole Barry's area, Lane area, could be amazing. You know, the way we'd have to have, you know, for bus stops and all this kind of stuff as well. They brought up about the marina as well. I know there's a lot of people still interested in the marina. Obviously, that was knocked again, you know, by things. But, you know, we just have to work around these people as well. These are only individual people, Noel. So I always say, what we say is the answer is no. What is the question? And
yeah,
these
exactly.
are the people. What,
yeah.
you know, your answer, whatever question you're going to ask, the answer will be no. You know the way. But you work around these people. You
yeah.
know, you have to work around these people. These are not people who rule us because we pay their wages. You know, we're the taxpayers. We actually pay these people's wages. So we need them to get off. You know, and their finger basically.
Exactly. Take
and
the finger out and almost start doing things for us. Like, because
like
as you say, like, you know, they are the elected representatives.
Absolutely. But
yeah.
like the Kathleen May would be amazing kind of attraction.
It would be a major tourist attraction. It would be.
Ah, listen.
And it would, you know, y'all would have something that no other town in around East Cork or West Waterford would have. It would be a huge attraction.
But and you know what? For me, Noel, this is what kind of, I just imagine myself coming around, we'll say you'd have to have, we'll say the stern of the boat towards the Keys Bar, because obviously the bowsprit, you don't want, you know, there's still a key
yeah.
slipway there and all that. So you'd have the stern there. Very safe place, Noel, very safe place, because the southeasterlies don't affect that because it's protected.
Would she, as if she's there, now I know it's in dry dock at the moment.
Yeah.
If she was there, would she be constantly being rowed by the tide? Or,
no, basically, because this is what I wanted to see, was the, this is why I kind of went down to the Dunbrody as well, to see how they had it. And it's a brilliant setup. They have two like H-arms going into the sea.
Yes.
Which doesn't, and then they're supported obviously from the sides. But basically it's like a runner system. So there's a kind of a runner system bolted onto the side of the Dunbrody when the tide comes in. It just lifts straight up, straight back down, straight up on this run. So it doesn't move in or out. Ever or
but
back and forward ever, it can only go one way, up or down.
It can only go one way, right? But would it be down through the years? Would the timbers underneath want attention? Would she be wanted to be lifted every so often for attention?
Well, she probably would go into dry dock every so often again. But again, a good thing with us is the tide will go out, so it can be checked very easily,
yes.
twice a day. You know the way, basically.
Yes.
Because
yes.
as I said, I was in it, but. In the Clark's time, they actually did it. And what they said was they brought it up and they put it up in dry dock themselves. We'll say this was in a place called Brunswick Wharf in the east of the water, east the water, and never heard of that. And what they said was 70% of the original planking was stripped from the frames, enabling most of the internal timbers to be refitted again as well. And it was, they said the stern of the ship was stripped onto the keel, right onto the ship. So the keel is the... So this is basically a brand new ship.
This is a brand new ship, so like...
Less than 20 years old. Like,
but there's another 120 years in it, so...
And plus more.
And plus more.
You know the
yeah,
way?
Yeah,
because
that's
amazing. It's easy to take a one board and put in another board to replace it. It was a great story, again, on Europe, how they were steaming it and all that kind
that's
of...
That's right, they were steaming
bending,
the board. Yeah,
and bending the boards
yeah.
in as well on top of it. But it was just, you know, and at the moment, there's a 400... breaker, so it's the auxiliary bit is gone from the sails, so
of course, yeah.
the auxiliary is the sails really, you know the way, it's mainly just generally engine power, because when I went down there, I couldn't understand, I said there's one engine, I could see one engine above, and then across from it they had the diesel tanks, so they were offsetting the weight of the engine.
Yes,
with the diesel
tank,
that's
what they usually do, yeah.
But
yeah.
there was one engine, but when I went underneath it, I actually went around it and there was two propellers, and I said, how was there two propellers if only one engine?
Yeah.
But what it actually says was it was fitted out, we'll say, by the Steve Clark, and it was fitted out by a 400 brake horse power. So the engines are definitely getting bigger in this thing all
yes,
the time.
Yes.
So this is a 300 kilowatt Detroit diesel engine, and it's an ex-Oran lifeboat. So, you know, we'd have the connection with the lifeboat as well.
Yeah.
And what they said was the single propellers were replaced by a pair of hydraulically driven propellers.
Oh, yes.
This is new. You know the way, this is all...
This was modern technology.
And
yeah.
this boat at the moment, if you fill it up with fuel, costs you a couple of quid, it can do 2,000 miles, nautical miles. So it could go off to America, basically under engine power alone, Noel. Do you know the way? So it's 2,000 miles is 3,200 kilometres.
Mm.
Do you know the way? It could go a hell of a long ways just on one fuel tank as well.
Yeah.
Just on, you know the way. So it's brilliant to see it. It's you know,
it's a brilliant concept.
And
I must congratulate you, I suppose, for the work that you have done so far, because you've taken this from a nutshell of an idea and brought it to this.
But it's
so
not,
you've actually sown the seeds.
Well,
for people to act on.
It's like a kind of a train with many tracks. There's different tracks. And I have to say, like Gerard Flanagan as well from the Business Alliance, from the committee that's there as well, that's newly formed committee as well. Everybody's thrown in so many ideas. It's brilliant. Gerard then was in contact with Phil, the owner, as well. And I think from the Business Alliance, they went to Phil and said, listen, we have plan A, B, C, D, E. What would be of interest? And it was all different suggestions of renting, buying, leasing, whatever it was. And the response then from Phil Clark was, we're open to everything. And
well,
that was sort of...
Well, there you have it.
This wasn't kind of, oh, we'll take it and see. He said, we're open to everything. So this was brilliant. For us, this is the kind of what we wanted to hear, what everybody wanted to hear. But we need to do it. Like, for you all as well, geez, wouldn't it be just brilliant to be able to walk down the docks and have this... sitting there every time. Like, I love it even going, like, we don't go to New Ross that much now because we have the bridge going across, so a lot of us don't go in there. But when I drove in, I was going across the bridge, and I said, no, I go down wrong, you know, the way the things. And there was, you just couldn't take your eyes from it anyway, from the Dunbrody, because you could see it from everywhere, you know the way.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just amazing. They have a coffee shop inside there, a little museum. They did all the bits and pieces.
Yeah, and one of the ideas I think that the Business Alliance and Gerard Flanagan came up with actually was a museum.
Yeah.
And you could tie the museum within with this.
But I would, like, I'd have an open museum. And again, we were talking before, Noel, about I was over at the Great Eastern. No, I didn't get onto the Great Eastern. This is in Bristol.
Yes.
But what they had was the whole dock area around it was a museum. So it was all barrels and, you know the way. No, unfortunately.
It looked the part.
Part. Because what they were doing was they were showing it as if it would be at the dock and what would be there waiting to go aboard as well. Do you know the way? It was brilliantly, and it was all open.
It was a trip back in time, and people love that.
Do you know what it was? And it was just, it doesn't have to be much, because as I said, for me, again, Billard Hall, leave it whole. The lads in the snooker hall, leave them alone.
You don't change anything, you add to it.
You just add to it. The likes of the tourist office that's there, make that into the Catalina May Museum, and you know, you can go on board, pay whatever it is, because it needs to be done. But it's not, you need volunteers as well, and there's loads of people who said that they'd love to volunteer. If this can get this back, there's loads of people. There's the business, there's the age action group, we'll say, and y'all as well. There's loads of them there that are very, very interested in seeing this, but it would just be fantastic for the whole town.
And finally, Mike, of course, you have a personal interest in this, haven't you?
I do indeed. And I'll tell you, it was my own father-in-law.
That's how it was coming.
My late father-in-law, Paddy. Oh,
Paddy O'Mahony.
Yes. And Paddy was on it, spent a long time as a crewman as well on it. And his brother, Morris.
Morris.
And Morris was on it, and Morris O'Mahony as well. The two of them. And it's a lovely one because there's a BBC, if you go on YouTube and put in the Catalina May videos, YouTube, there's a BBC one, and it's all about Captain Jewel. And Paddy's on it, and his brother Morris is on it. And it's lovely to see it because they're the two frames, we'll say.
Yes.
And the two boys are working away, you know, as young men.
Yes.
We lost poor Paddy recently as well.
That's
and then
right,
Morris,
Morris
was lost the year before as well.
Yes.
You know the way I saw it.
Yes.
Was, what got me, it was actually funny enough, and I won't get into it, but it was when I went down and saw the cabins. We were downstairs, and because I'd said it to the ladies as well that, you know, that my father-in-law and his brother were actually on, and they were saying, well, this is where they would have slept. You know what I mean? They had the tables there where they ate, and at the bow. And then we'll say at the where the crew used to sleep, I think was at the stern of it.
That's right,
and at the side of it as well. Anyway, as well. Yeah. So yeah, it was, you know, so it was very interesting for me. Fantastic trip, and it was just really a privilege. I can't say it. You know the way I can't even use the word privilege, because it was more than that as well. Anyway, in fairness with Noel.
Yeah. Well, like, let's face it again, and indeed, I know it was a kind of a departure, I suppose, from our historical point of view this week.
But it's still y'all,
and indeed, I sincerely hope that your dream will come true.
Absolutely. Well, it's not my dream, but it's a lot of people's dreams.
It's a lot of people's dream, but you were one of the instigators of this, so you can take the praise for going over and looking at it and indeed putting the germ of an idea. It's, folks, it's thrown out there. It would, and as I say, it would be a marvellous asset to
push,
our town.
Please push.
So please, you know, push, and indeed please
push. Your elective
push.
Representatives, say it to them. You know, exactly. You're interested. If you're interested, please tell them as well, please.
Exactly. Exactly. Mike, again, thank you very much for coming in.
Noel, again,
you're a fountain of knowledge, as we all miss. And we're certainly looking forward to your next presentation.
Thanks
here
million,
in Community
Noel.
Radio.
We'll be going under the water next presentation, Noel.
Under the water.
Under
okay,
the water.
Okay,
so
okay.
We'll be doing
so
that.
We'll hold that thought and we'll go under the water. We'll have our snorkels and goggles on for the next one. Again, Mike, thank you very much
for coming in. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you. Bye.